Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field.
Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer here in the courtroom of current events, and we've got some political specials coming on this week. We are going to start today with Trump and whether or not he can actually stop this peaceful transition of power. We've got an episode where I talked to my dad, George Tragos, about how a president can try to fight this peaceful transition of power and whether or not we think Trump is going to do it, and if he does, whether or not he will be successful. And just in case anybody thinks we are making this up out of left field or they have lived under a rock for the last few months, we are going to start this episode with an audio clip of Trump discussing the topic of a peaceful transition of power.
Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transfer of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
People are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transfer of power?
We want to get rid of the ballots, and we'll have a very peaceful, there won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it. And you know who knows it better than anybody else? The Democrats know it better.
On today's episode of The Lawyer You Know, I've got my dad, George Tragos, on to talk about some of the clips we just saw and people have heard for the last few months that Trump might not go quietly should he lose the election in November. And my question is, how can a president in today's day and age refuse to accept an election where he loses in a democracy in a free country like America?
Well, there's really only two ways. One is you do a court battle, you do it the legally sufficient way, or you do it by force, physical.
Okay, so when you talk about by force, which I think is the less common way for something like this to be challenged, what would that look like in today's day and age? How could Trump physically refuse to leave the White House?
Well, he can take a playbook from third world countries where presidents refuse to leave, where you get the Joint Chiefs of Staff behind you. They surround the White House with tanks, and they make sure that you stay president by their physical sheer force.
So that sounds like the Trump way, but how would he actually do that? He'd have to convince them that there was some kind of fraud, or like how would he even command them still to do so?
He would have to convince them. You know, the Joint Chiefs are a fairly independent group, and they would have to be convinced that the country would just go into a disaster, it'd be all over, the end of the world, if Trump didn't stay as president. He would believe that he is the commander-in-chief. He would order them to do it. They're an independent bunch. But if they felt that the end of the world was coming, they would do it.
But he's not the commander-in-chief anymore, right? So once he loses the election, he loses that position, so he wouldn't even rightfully be able to order them to protect the White House while he stayed in it.
Well, the 20th Amendment established noon, January 20th, as the day he stops being president, and the new person becomes president.
And also, in turn, becomes commander-in-chief, right?
Right.
Okay, so I don't think it's likely, then, that he stays in the White House by force, although he may think it is.
Well, of course, there's another option. Maybe the Secret Service would, you know, protect him and keep him in the White House. But again, highly unlikely.
Right. So then let's talk about the legal battle that could ensue. We all remember Bush v. Gore. We've heard about recounts in the past. We just had one recently in Florida for the governor race. What would a legal battle look like for Trump to fight the results of this election?
I think it would have to involve fraud.
Okay.
I think it would have to involve something that would be so criminal that would invalidate the total election. And he'd have to convince the Supreme Court, first of all, to hear the case. And if he did convince them to hear the case, then he'd really have to convince them, again, widespread fraud.
So we've done a podcast on how the Supreme Court comes to hear cases. I think it was on appeals in different courts and how they decide what cases they're going to listen to or not. This one obviously would be of the utmost importance for them to determine whether or not they want to hear it. But how would he show fraud? What would the fraud look like in this election? What is he pointing to as something that may be fraudulent in order to get it to the Supreme Court?
As far as the ballots are concerned, it's a disaster. A solicited ballot. Okay, solicited is okay. You're soliciting, you're asking, they send it back, you send it back. I did that. If you have an unsolicited, they're sending millions of ballots all over the country. There's fraud. They found them in creeks. They found some with the name Trump. Just happened to have the name Trump just the other day in a waste paper basket. They're being sent all over the place. And take a look at what happened in New Jersey. Take a look at what happened in Virginia and other places. They're not losing 2%, 1%, which, by the way, is too much. An election could be won or lost with that. They're losing 30 and 40%. This is going to be a fraud like you've never seen.
Well, he's already come up with the idea that we have these mail-in ballots.
Unsolicited mail-in ballots.
Right, and they're fraudulent. And he's found some examples. We've seen in trash cans ballots where Trump was checked and thrown.
Trump just happened to be the name on them.
Right. We've seen that mail carriers refused or haven't delivered the ballots to certain Republican areas. They've been isolated, but nothing's been intentional fraud yet. But there's been these isolated incidents. If he can show enough widespread fraud throughout the country that it would have made a difference in the election, the Supreme Court probably could invalidate the election.
But that's highly unlikely.
Well, it's never been done before.
Right.
It's a whole new
And the other
route.
Thing is it would have to be a pretty close election, because if it's 10% or something between them, then they're unlikely to hear it. There's unlikely to be that much fraud. But if it's within one percentile, which things have come down to in the past, especially for governor like we've talked about, then I think he may have a better chance for them to at least look at it.
Right. There's a situation where, for instance, there have been governors who have not left office.
And what happens in those cases?
Well, sometimes they've had to have been forced out by the state troopers. Georgia at one time had three people saying they were governor. And they had to be forced out or convinced to leave. It has happened in some race, never the president.
So let's say he does file a lawsuit. Is there some sort of injunction he files with it so that he stays in office until they make a determination as to whether or not this was a fraudulent election?
I think that's probably the most likely way, yes, for an injunction to have him stay there.
An injunction forces somebody to do something or stops someone
right.
from doing something. It's not for monetary value, but so an injunction in this case would hold everything, pause everything, everyone stay where you are, including him sitting in the White House.
Yeah, and again, this is all new territory. It's never happened before in our country. George Washington, when he didn't run for his third term, even though they wanted him to,
right. And
John Adams got elected, George Washington specifically walked behind John Adams to show that he was subservient now to John Adams.
And we've seen, in the past, presidents write letters and leave them in the desk. So the
George Bush wrote one for Clinton saying, "You are now our president."
Right, exactly. And that's always great for the country to feel united. And it's just not another way that Trump is not necessarily doing that. And he hasn't said he's not going to transfer power peaceably, but he's definitely left the door open and not answered the question when it's been asked of him. So I guess we don't know all the details of what's going to shake out in the election yet. We don't know who's going to win or lose or how those ballots are going to come in. So we'll keep an eye toward the future, but I don't think it's likely that he'd be successful in stopping an election that he lost in November.
Wouldn't you like to know if Trump wrote a letter, Biden wins, wouldn't you like to see the letter that Trump writes to Biden and leaves in the president's desk?
I'd like to see the letter, but thanks for listening to this episode. Hopefully you guys learned something, and we'll be back with you next time.
Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer here in the courtroom of current events, and we're going to stick on the political topics today and hit Joe Biden. I've got my dad on to talk about court packing and whether or not Joe Biden will pack the court, whether or not he should, if it's been tried and successful in the past, and what it would look like going forward. To get this discussion rolling, we're going to start with an audio clip of Joe Biden discussing the topic of court packing.
To tell the American people tonight whether or not you will support either ending the filibuster or packing the court.
Whatever position I take in that, that'll become the issue. The issue is the American people should speak. You should go out and vote. Make sure you, in fact, let people know you're a senator. I'm not going to answer the question.
Why would you answer that question?
The question is,
who is on your list, Joe?
Dad George Tragos on to talk more politics, and today we're going to shift our focus to Joe Biden. We've seen the videos where he refuses to answer the question as to whether or not he's going to pack the court, and I want to start off by talking about what is court packing.
Well, Article 2 of the United States Constitution established the Supreme Court, but it didn't say how many justices should be on the Supreme Court. So when it first started out, it had 6. We have 9 now. It's had as many as 10 because the legislature or Congress keeps passing laws. But the last one they passed was 1869. And in 1869, they passed a law that said 9 Supreme Court justices.
But that's not something that's necessarily in the Constitution, which is why it's susceptible to change.
It absolutely is not in the Constitution, so that's why Congress can amend it and change it.
So what is packing then? What is packing?
Packing would be, like, let's say right now we're at 9, and let's say we have a 6-3 conservative to liberal. Well, we want to change that. So Biden gets elected, we make it 15 judges, so that Biden gets to appoint 6 additional judges and changes the majority to a liberal majority instead of a conservative majority.
Why would that ever be allowed? Like, has court packing happened in the past?
It's been tried.
Okay.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt tried to do it.
Attempt.
In 1936, because they blew out his New Deal, he wanted to change the court. So what he said is he wanted to appoint a new justice for every 70-year-old justice up to 15. So if they turn 70, he gets to appoint another one, up to 15 judges.
And how far did he get down the road?
Nowhere. His own party balked at it. His own party said, no, we're not doing it. We're not packing the court. You know, interestingly, I know that Joe Biden said he wouldn't do it, but
he didn't say he wouldn't do it.
Well, he didn't answer the question.
Right. He refused to answer
but
the question.
But he did say in the past, in last year when he was asked the question, he said that he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, but you know everything that politicians said in the
past
don't matter. It only matters what they say now, and that only matters for right now. But let's assume he's not going to answer the question as far as his presidential race goes, because that's the stance he's taken so far. Why is he refusing to answer the question? Why doesn't he just say yes if that's what his party wants him to do?
Well, I don't know if that's what his party wants him to do, because Schumer is saying he wants to pack the court. Now, Senator Schumer. Bernie Sanders says, no, we shouldn't pack the court. So his party's kind of split on it, and I think he doesn't want to alienate moderates.
So why would anybody in his party like Bernie Sanders say not to pack the court if it benefits them and they can pack it with judges that kind of further their agenda? Why would anybody in the party not want to do that?
Because I think some people are smart enough to realize if you do it this time for your agenda,
exactly,
then next week someone's going to do it for their agenda. Why do you think right now a majority of the senators can approve a United States Supreme Court justice? Because when the Democrats have the power to appoint, they change the rules from 60% to a majority in the Senate.
Which is just 51%.
Right. So now they're getting bit by it, because now the Senate can approve judges by 51%.
So I think a lot of people don't know that this stuff changes in politics, like how Supreme Court justices get affirmed, like you're saying, the percentage, how many Supreme Court justices there are. Not all of this is locked into the Constitution exactly how this works, and it's susceptible to change. But you have to realize once you change it when you're in power, your party in a two-party system is not always going to be in power. So you're saying people that are on the Democratic side, like Bernie Sanders, might not want the court to be packed because, God forbid, Trump wins, then maybe he's going to pack the court even more and be able to appoint 6 new justices, then it's over for the lifetime of these justices.
Right.
So he looks kind of, he has some foresight to see that it could come back and bite you in the future.
Right. The legislation that establishes the number of justices is a majority in the House have to pass it and a majority in the Senate have to pass it. And so if they both pass it, again, it hasn't happened since 1869. And I think the reason is people were smart enough to realize that you just can't keep changing the number of justices just to suit your political philosophy.
And so in order for it to get passed and all this to happen, for court packing to actually come to fruition, the same party would have to be in control of the presidency, the Senate, and the House.
Right.
That's really the only way it gets through, because no party, over somebody's dead body, would they let one president and an opposing side appoint 6 justices.
Which happened under FDR. FDR had
his party was
in control of the Senate. His party was in control of the House, and he couldn't get it through. But you know, you want to think back a little bit to George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
He appointed all 6.
Yeah,
you know,
that was when everybody got along a little bit better than we do now.
But
I think
he was able to appoint all 6.
Just as divisive as it is, I can never see something like this happening, no matter who's in power, because the other side will fight so hard to not let something. So, I mean, the fact that Trump is potentially going to appoint 3 justices is such a crazy swing, which is why last election was such a big deal. So I don't foresee this happening in the future. Do you see court packing being a thing that happens in the next, I mean, let's just say in the next 4 years if Biden wins?
You know, I hate to say this, but in our atmosphere right now, it scares me. that people are so divided that no one just thinks of the whole country.
Right.
And no one thinks, what's best for the country? And is this really good for the country for us to change the Supreme Court just to bend to our will? I really am worried that this country is going to come down to that.
And I can understand, like, no matter what side you're on, not wanting this, because you can imagine a world, especially over the last 4 years, you can imagine a world where somebody's in power that you don't agree with. And would you want them to have this same power to pack the court as somebody you do agree with at this moment in time? So I think that's kind of the big foresight. So that's what court packing is. It's basically shoving extra Supreme Court justices in while you're in power to balance the court, so they say. But in reality, it's not something that's very easy to happen. You have to be in control of all three branches of government, and I don't think that that really is something that's in place right now.
You've been listening to Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field. Find out more at TragosLaw.com.